born out of necessity.
All right, fam, we are back for another episode of The Boom Podcast. I'm Candace Wayne, your host, and I've got, of course, driving this conversation with me, my brother Robert E. Purvey, hailing from the great state of Texas.
Gotta put the E in there.
That's right. I did it right this time. Listen, we are only, what, 20 episodes in it? I finally got it right?
You got there. It's okay. It's okay. That's all that matters.
I don't care how you get there, right?
As long as you get there.
Somebody say that in the song.
I'm just glad I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, you be about to fire me every episode.
No, listen, why every time we jump in a conversation, you got to, I mean, listen.
The people need to know the truth.
But some things that happened, my mama said, every truth need not be told. And what happens in this house stays in this house.
It happened in the yard. It wasn't in the house. It was in the yard.
Oh, man. But you know what I think is true, though? I think that when you have established a certain relationship and the connectivity with people, you can have some tough conversations.
Absolutely, because if we weren't cool, I would have left.
But today's conversation is a tough conversation to have. And I think that there might be some people who hear this conversation and are kind of like, I don't know about y'all anymore. But there might be some people who might hear it and be like, oh, man, I might need to reevaluate some of the ways that I've been doing some things. Because I feel like it's one of them things where it's like it's just too much at stake.
Yep.
There's too much at stake if we continue to do things how we have been doing them. But if we change things up and don't hold on to what has brought us this far too much, then there's some stuff that's at stake right there too.
Absolutely.
Right? So in this conversation today, we're diving in between holding the tension of the traditional in the church and then the things that have been innovated. And we're going to just kind of go back and forth and say, hey, have some traditions been held on for a little bit too long? Or is it still some roots and some depth that is helpful and beneficial for our children and youth? Or thinking about things on the other side, are some innovations, have they gone too far? Or have some things been innovated that have really just been beneficial for the sake of our children, our youth, as we work to establish a lifelong faith?
So buckle up. This one of them ones. It's one of those episodes where you got to buckle up because you may not agree with everything or you may agree with some things, but it's all for the building of the kingdom and to just help us to think outside the box on where we're going as a church.
Yeah. Before we introduce our guests, I got one.
What's that?
Unpopular opinion. Solange is better than Beyonce.
Solange is better than Beyonce. Yeah. I'm going to let you live with that one.
Paula is shaking her head. She's in utter disgust. Hey, Paula.
No. Solange?
Like, she got a whole vibe that's just like, it's just different than Beyonce. It just sucks you in. Have you heard Cranes in the Sky? Ooh. Oh, man. But so first, one of the first guests we have on this conversation today is my girl, Paula Danielle. Paula and I go way back, right? Way, way back. We went to seminary together, both 2009 graduates of the Candler School of Theology at the Emory University.
The Candler School of Theology, Emory University.
And we have been on this journey in Next Gen Ministry together for a really long time. And she has kind of branched off recently and planted a church over there in Charlotte called Cohesion Church. So we're grateful to have you a part of this conversation with us, Paula.
I'm excited about this conversation. Thank you for having me.
And also we got my boy Chris Cox in the house.
What's good, family?
Hey, Chris.
Listen, I'm excited to be here, y'all. I think the last episode that I was here, I was in the studio. Purvey, was it? But the budget the budget calls for both of us to be here today.
Come
in
on.
Person, and that's a good thing. I'm excited about this conversation.
That's right.
That boom blessing.
don't get it twisted. We are still a startup.
Come on.
We trying to crank this engine up. We trying to get off the ground. Sometimes we fly a little bit. Sometimes we kind of drop it back down to what's realistic, which is why we have another guest who is virtual. We have my brother, Brandon Walker, who is from Mount Tabor Baptist Church over there. You're in Dallas, right?
Yeah, Dallas, Texas.
In Dallas, Texas.
Highland Hills.
First giving up to God, who's the head of my life.
Hey!
The pastor of this podcast, Candace. To my brother, Pastor Robert Murphy, God bless you, Pastor Paula, and everyone in their respective places, God bless you.
And the doors of church are now open. You can pass the offering plate.
How did y'all see my preacher hands?
Yes, we saw preacher hands. One of those things in the church that might need to retire. What is that about? Like, why do pastors do that?
I'm still researching that. I don't know what this.
Think better?
I don't know what that is, actually.
So in this conversation today, we're just going to all throw out some different things that we've been thinking about, whether it be, you know, something that has been an innovation that we've seen within a church, or maybe a tradition or something that we've just been kind of having some questions or rethinking.
You know, my whole goal, the reason why I love co-hosting this podcast is because I know we have so many people in a Black church context who are listening and gathering information. And so we're speaking to you. Paul is planting a church. Brandon pastors. He's a millennial that pastors a traditional church in Dallas, Texas. And so I'm eager to hear about their perspectives. And then, you know, Chris and I are OGs in the next gen ministry space, and just seeing new leaders come up and seeing church do things differently and see churches not necessarily care about next gen. And so I'm just excited for this conversation and where it can go.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm thinking. I feel like we have overcomplicated what an everyday relationship with God looks like. And I feel like it has planted seeds within children that you got to be praying for 4 hours a day, that you got to be reading a whole book of the Bible every day. And I feel like it has, even the ways that we talk about spiritual disciplines, I feel like it's very boxed, right? There's not really much space for the creative and our creator God to use the arts when it comes to spiritual disciplines, right? When I was growing up, it was like you connect with God through prayer, through fasting, and through reading your word. And maybe worship in church, like, you know, some music or something. But if it's not that, then you're not connecting with God. And I think that we've set this standard or this expectation that it has to look a certain way that has turned some people off and made some people feel like a relationship with God is unattainable. And so what that's done in my mind is it creates these children who grow up to be teenagers and these teenagers who grow up to be adults and these adults who still have a hard time trying to connect with God and trying to have a relationship with God because they feel like I got to be spending 4 hours in prayer. I got to fast with no food for 40 days like Jesus did. But the reality is, like, only people who are spending that much time in prayer every day is a monk. Right. And I feel like God sees the fact that you got to go to school, you got to go to work. I feel like God sees the reality of our lives and honors that. And I feel like with God honoring that, there's other ways of us spending time with God and showing God that we care about God by attending to the things that God has blessed us with. Mm-hmm. Like the opportunity to go to school, like the opportunity of having a job. Right. I mean, that's just what I'm thinking.
I want to throw the question to Paula first. I think out of all of us, Paula has young adults she's raised. So your kids are young millennials.
Gen Z.
Yeah. So I would like to answer that question. Like, how you think the church is complicated honoring God, following God? Because I think you being a believer yourself, but raising young people who are probably walking through that now. So I want to throw that to you.
Candace, I think you're absolutely right. That we have complicated what it means to follow God. And Purvy, you can call me P. It's fine. Pastor P, Pastor Paula P, it's whatever. but I think one of the things is, traditionally, our community has needed to be dependent on church. And we have equated God and church and made them synonymous. And so as pastors, in younger pastors, we've inherited this idea of teaching people that the only way to be discipled is if all of their discipleship activity is anchors them back to Sunday morning service. And while Sunday morning service is important, we live in a world that makes it very difficult for some people to get to Sunday morning service. And so if everything comes back to, well, I'm not praying because I'm not going to church. I'm not reading my Bible because I'm not going to church. I miss the church fast. I miss this. I miss that. And everything comes back to church and not necessarily God and faith. Then we are erecting a hurdle that some people just practically cannot get around. Yes, when it comes to kids and teens, their lives are busier than any other generation that came before them. They have more opportunities than we have, and definitely than the generations before us. Praise God for the elders and the ancestors that paved the way. But with that benefit and with those opportunities, that means the church and formulated spiritual practices are no longer the center of their lives. We have to teach them how to encounter God as they go about life, as they go about school, as they go about sports, as they go about Girl Scouts, as they go about Boy Scouts, like all the things that they have when they're kids, and then when they're how they go about work, how they go about dating, how you go about life. And I think if we were focused more on teaching our kids and students to pray without ceasing, then they wouldn't feel the need to cease life in order to pray.
People are just not going to church the way that they used to. So we do need to implement some practices that help them practice their faith outside of it. But one of the things that I was thinking about, and it's kind of along the same lines, was just this priority and this pressure that we placed on like memorizing scripture or memorizing, you know, biblical truths, and how we can't really utilize, and not necessarily how we can utilize those things. Mm. We want to memorize them, but we're not teaching them how to utilize them. And so it's like, I want you to know more about God than I want you to know God. And you only know God as you walk with him. And as you do life with him, you get to actually know him. And some people settled in on, let me go to a Sunday school and just teach you about God. You just need to know everything there is to know about God. And I remember having this like exchange with one of my kids' ministry leaders at a previous ministry I was working at, because she was like, we need to get back to teaching them the Ten Commandments and teaching them the books of the Bible, and they need to memorize the books of the Bible. And I'm like, listen, for what these kids are struggling with, their memory of the books of the Bible is not necessarily what's going to be as helpful as what those books say and how those books relate to their lives.
That's so real, because how does me knowing the Ten Commandments, or me knowing the books of the Bible, or how many books are in the Bible, or even how about this, knowing in church when to stand and when to sit, absolutely, and knowing the Apostles' Creed and the Lord's Prayer, not to say that those things aren't important, but how is that helping me to stand up against peer pressure, bullying? How is that helping me to be able to live out my faith and when real life is happening right in front of me? So if a kid's pastor is listening right now, talk a little bit more about what you feel like might be helpful, because I know you got an extensive background in kids ministry, even though you stepped out on us and got demoted to senior pastoring, you know, because the fun is with the kids. So seriously, talk a little bit about what you feel like that should look like.
How those things are taught is making a deposit into something that we know they will experience later. And so, no, I'm not saying we need to lecture our kids on the 66 books of the Bible, just for example, but music, rhyme, and rhythm, there is no trade-off for those things and for laying those blocks. Sesame Street, as old as it is still very much applicable to kids. PBS and all of those, who's the little, the black girl that does the hip-hop songs?
Oh, Gracie.
Gracie, girl. Oh, yeah. I was like, I don't know.
Gracie goes hard, man. Gracie goes hard. I don't even have kids. I listen to Gracie. She goes hard.
See, anyway, we are laying the building. So kid ministry leaders, let me say this to you, if nobody has told this to you this year, what you do is extremely important. I understand a lot of times in our culture that you have the youth pastor and the kids director. They will pay for a youth pastor to come on staff before they'll pay for a kids pastor to come on staff. Oftentimes, it may even be a volunteer position, although a youth pastor is full-time. No shade to all my youth pastors on this call, okay? All I'm saying is that what you do, kids pastors, kids directors, are laying the building blocks. And if we do not lay them in preschool and elementary school, there are and will be gaps in middle school and high school. And it's unrealistic to think we can lay them and fill in the gaps.
Yeah. I was going to jump in and say, like, that's one of the things, it's a major focus for me, because I'm a next-gen pastor at the church that I'm at now. And so I deal a lot with our kids' ministry as well. We have a kids' pastor as well. And one of the things that we try to make sure we do is not make our kids ministry. And I love how Pastor Paula keeps saying kids ministry, and not just what you would think if I were to say Sunday school.
Come
right?
on. Come on.
And I know that's controversial, because some people are like, we love our Sunday school. But at the same time, sometimes that made church feel more like school, and it made it feel like a school that lacked empathy and relevancy. Because you were just teaching out of a book, and there was no real life application. There was no music. Mm-hmm. There was no. And one of the things our pastor tells us that he expects us to do in our kids' ministry is to create or to minister through this strategy that's called like edutaining, right? So it's education and entertaining at the same time. And it's okay. You know, it's okay for kids to have fun while they learn about Jesus, right? And I just don't remember it always being fun when I was learning about Jesus.
It made it feel like just uninteresting. Like, it's just like, oh, if this is what a relationship with God looks like, then I don't want no parts of that. Like, I mean, if I got to be a square, then like, no, you know, like, I mean, I'm just not doing that. I mean, I remember vividly saying, I am not taking my relationship with God seriously until I'm retired and I can play bingo. And I mean, because bingo is what you do when you old. And that, listen, that's, I remember vividly saying that. And then like 2 years later, God called me to ministry. And I was like, what? No, bingo days, right? Bingo days, Lord. Yeah,
Brendan, you pastor at a traditional church, and so how are you navigating that tension between doing ministry for kids that draws them to Christ, that makes them love God in an entertaining way, but dealing with our seasoned saints that may have some disagreements with how that looks?
What I've learned, what I am learning, is that the seasoned saints in my context mean well, they just don't know better. And I try not to villainize them for not knowing better and focus on the fact that at least they have great intentions and want to see the same thing I want to see when it comes to our children, even if they don't think about it the same way. As we're building, we're actually building, Pervy, you know this more intimately, but we're in a season of building when it comes to like our children and youth ministry and stuff like that. And one of the things, one of the lines of thinking that I had to immediately correct is that in our seasoned saints' minds, children's ministry, children and youth ministry for that matter, is training ground for service in the church as an adult. So obviously we're gonna teach them the Bible and teach them the books of the Bible and do all this other stuff, but they need to know how to do this, and they need to know, you know, what usher's supposed to do, and they need to know how the deacons handle this, and they need to know. So it's like training in addition to all of the other, you know, spiritual things. It's training ground for, you know, because when it's your turn, you're gonna have to count the money. So, and while I do want people to know how to count, right, no doubt,
right,
I also want them to be like good disciples. I also want them to have like an actual relationship with Jesus Christ and not just stamps,
right?
You know, on a checklist here, I know how to do this, I know how to do that, I know how to do this in church, right? And so, just trying to get them to understand that there's a little bit more to this than just preparing them to be good adult churchgoers.
Yeah.
And good adult church members, but actual disciples of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I think that churches have to do a better job of strategizing on how to help parents become the main disciple makers in their kids' life.
You stole my answer. That's literally where I was going to go when it got to me, but you got it.
Because like, it's for conversation, right? Because I think we prioritize men's ministry, women's ministry. We do a little bit with kids' ministry. We don't give them no money, but we give them a little room in the back and tell them, you know, do something with the kids, with youth ministry. But when it comes to how our culture now, what I'm seeing through research and just boots on the ground, post-COVID, we have a lot of seeker families that are coming into the church and a lot of parents who have never been to church or who have been hurt by the church and are coming back to the church. And they're asking the question, what do you have for my kids?
Yeah.
But more importantly, how can you help me? Because I don't know what to do because I'm a single parent. But more what we're seeing now, I'm in a blended family.
Yeah.
So I brought my kids together. My husband has his kids. And my kid's father is still alive. Their kid's mother is still alive. We have this whole big blended family. How do we walk every day with our kids mm-hmm. in our family dynamic? And the church is saying, come to Bible study.
Yeah.
Go to women's right. ministry. Go to men's ministry. We're not giving them any practical tips on how to be disciple makers in the home every day. There's 168 hours in a week, and you may get
good math right there. My
you
brother.
May get. I researched last week. Make sure I was right. You may get an hour and 15 minutes, and then the study out of the hour 15 minutes, the attention span you get with that man or woman is about 30 minutes. So you literally have 30 minutes to help this man or woman how to be a better person or show up for their family or for their kids. And the church is not taking advantage of it. And I'm not knocking pastors and how they preach and how they put their sermons together. But in the strategy of how we're growing and building our churches, we don't have in the strategy on how we're helping parents show up as disciple makers in their home.
I agree with you, but what are some suggestions for how we do that?
And I have ideas, but to be completely honest from my heart, P, I really don't know. I think it takes leaders really coming together to ask that question and come up with that answer together, because every region is different. Every city is different. That we have different things going on in our communities. So from my heart, I don't know. From my head, I know there's strategies. We can meet with our community leaders and people in our community to see what parent programs we have and how we can strategize biblical principles around parent programs that are already in existence but don't maybe have a lot of eyes on them. Or we can come together with our church leaders and our church teams to come up with different tracks on parental discipleship, what that looks like. That's from my head, but from my heart, like, yo, I don't know. I think it's a question that we have to ask. That's very important because we're not even thinking about it. You know, like that's just my heart. Like, I think parents are left out, and they're taught how to be a good man or how to be a good woman. But how do we parent together? Like, how do we do that? And Brandon, you were jumping in. I want you to say what you had to say before you forget.
Okay, so since you stole my answer, I'm gonna do a B-side to it. Because if we're talking about equipping parents, I'm wondering if I do feel like perhaps we don't do a great job in equipping parents, but I also feel like in some cases, for those who would argue that, well, we do equip parents, I wonder if that time or effort of equipping is more slanted to equipping just mothers and just the women. And I say this because, so when I first got here, one of the ministries that I learned that my church had when I first got here was a ministry called the Mother's Council. Mm. Now, because I'm, you know, Baptist born, Baptist bred, and when I die, I'll be Baptist dead, I immediately thought, oh, the Mother's Board.
Yeah.
That's not what it was. So I'm like, okay, well, what's the Mother's Council? So they're like, well, you know, when people, you know, grieving family stuff, we send flowers and cars, we visit people, da da da. So okay, great, like congregational care, cool. In addition to that, we mentor young mothers. Mm-hmm. We did mentor young mothers. Okay, that's okay, cool, that's beautiful. Did y'all have a father's council?
Yes, it's like, called the deacons. Historically, historically, the African American church, yeah, we make room for men everywhere else. We make room for them with the deacons, we make room for them with the elders, we make room for them with the trustees, we make room for them because our 20 member churches need 10 associate pastors. Like, let me just for a second say yes, because everywhere else in the African American church, we make room to pour into men, and then we go, oh yeah, give the women something so that they'll stop asking to come to our table. And so that's where, no, they should not have assumed because you're a deacon, you're a good father. Because we also know in our community, being a deacon doesn't make you a good father,
yeah.
Right? That was an erroneous assumption to make, but that is the assumption historically we've made, Brandon.
And to your point, Paula, I wholeheartedly agree. I think we create more than enough space for men in church to lead and serve. I don't know how much space we're creating to actually disciple them though.
Yeah.
So it's obviously, if you a man, you can join in the church and get a spot in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But how much of that is discipling that man as a father, husband, and everything mm-hmm. else, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and so in this quest of trying to figure out how to, you know, equip parents to be disciple makers when it comes to their children, I'm also concerned that, you know, just like most things in church, it'll be slanted. Yep.
I think
in a way, historically, you know,
women
get all the advice of how to be this and that, but men, you just serve. It ain't no, there's barely any talk on your character and on your everything else.
Right, because we will create spaces to help mothers become good mothers, and we'll create spaces for men to become church leaders, but we mm-hmm. won't create spaces for mothers to become church leaders, and we won't create spaces for men to serve in church to become better fathers. So we then speak this language that women, you're only good enough to be a nurturing mother. And in our church, we want to bring you in, man of God, so you could become a deacon or a preacher. But we don't have a space to help them become parents. And so then we have fathers. We have men who want to come to church and lead, but don't know how to lead their families or lead their children. And we have mothers thinking that the only place I have in the church is I can nurture, I can serve, but I can't preach. I can't lead. I can just be a nurturer. So we try to put the women, and we want to put first lady over the children. We want to put over the women. So make sure the women got something. Make sure, but to put in a place of leader. So it's what it happens is it speaks this language, and we don't bring parents together, and we end up raising children in our churches that want spaces and places in the church, but will go home and don't respect their mother or their father for being a good man or a good woman. It's so many different ways it can go. Mm. What I'm saying is, like, it's just, we have to bring back this discipleship of parents. It's not about getting a position at the church, or it's not about becoming somebody at the church. It's about you taking the hand of your child every day and leading them to Christ in the home.
That's right.
That's the biggest thing. I didn't mean cut you off.
No, you're good. I think a lot of our strategy that we're going to develop to really help parents become disciple makers is going to start with a mentality shift to where we agree with the fact that God chose them to do it.
Yeah.
Say more about that. Keep talking about
like
that.
Like, we invest in youth pastors or youth directors because we believe God chose them to lead students. And we will invest in parents if we agree with the fact that God is the source of life who chose them to be the parents of these kids. And it is, and when we agree with that, we'll look at it a little bit different. Because I would just say, like, especially when I first got into youth ministry, I was probably one of those people who looked at parents with a side eye, like, you don't care.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you interact so much with students and you just hearing one side and different things like that. And you're like, and then you don't see them show up for certain things, or, you know, and yes, our church could do a better job at helping to disciple them and make them aware of ways that they can show up and do these things so that they don't just come to us. Because I can't tell you how many times I've had a parent come to me with a kid beside them and they're looking at me like, can you help them? And I'm like, no, I want to help you help them.
Yes, sir.
You know, because I believe God chose you to parent them and chose you to disciple them. And yes, when we believe that, we move a little bit.
That's so good.
May I add that single parents and younger parents aren't the only parents that need to be discipled?
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
I think they're the easy, low-hanging fruit. Like, you know, let's snatch up the young, let's snatch the young lady and pull them in, or the unmarried couple or whatever, pull them in. And while they may need discipling, obviously, they're not the brother so and so, deacon so and so, aunt sister so and so, who've been married for did it right, and raising children. They need it just as much.
Yep.
Brandon, you should put your fingers together.
if y'all would let me put my robe on, it would have really came across with some power, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the reasons for that is because the job of a parent is never done. I like, and then also you have people who kind of become parents later in life. Like my parents, great. Like, I feel like they did the best they could at raising us, and I'm so grateful for how they helped aid in me coming to know who Jesus is. And I'm everything I am. I tell people today, everything I am because of how my parents raised me, right? But my mom called me a few years ago because after we all left home, you know, I guess they got bored or something, and they decided to become foster parents. And I'm like, so they brought these new kids into their home, and this is a different generation than we were. And they didn't have as much time to lay a foundation as they had with us. And they know that I work with students this age. And so they call me all the time, and they're like, listen, this kid has some electronic device that is blowing smoke out of it, and I don't even know what this is. Like, my mom is like, is he smoking reefer? Like, and I'm like,
what are they vaping?
Like, they're, they were vaping. And I'm like, she was just going in. She's like, I don't know what this is. What is going on? And so she needed help parenting this kid in that space where he was. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not just the younger ones. It's not just, you know, single parents, but even those who have been parents who are now stepping in and becoming foster parents and things of that nature. They need some relevant discipleship for raising kids in these days.
Because to that point, if you look at studies and you look at the trajectory of parenting, you now have millennial parents who are on the cusp of being empty nesters. And then in the same church, you have parents who are empty nesters. And who have kind of been forgotten about. And it's like, it's to the point, like once that kid graduates high school, there's still parenting to be done. And so my whole point is that we have to some way pee back to your earlier point on what do we do. We got to create some type of strategy, some type of model that helps a parent walk through from birth all the way through, because I'll be 41 in November and I still need my 80-year-old father and my 70-year-old mother.
You know what I think though, to respond to that is what that strategy looks like. I think the best thing that a church can give a parent is another parent who is parenting the same stage and phase of life as them. I feel like some of the people who have helped me to keep my sanity, who have helped me to not think, okay, my kid really isn't tripping, this is normal. You know, people who have helped me up when I felt like I am failing, or the ones that I text me like, we don't whip kids, right?
Gentle parenting.
Come on now. Right? I mean, like, are the people who are parenting kids who are around the same phase as my kids are. And I think that that's could potentially be within some churches an easy reach. And it can be easy, something that's easy done. Like, I mean, what would it really look like for a church to say, hey, everybody who is potty training right now, or if you are potty training right now, or if you just potty trained your child, come to the church on Saturday at 10 a.m. and we just gonna sit down and have a conversation. We have maybe some teenagers is gonna watch these kids, and you just get the parents together and say, potty training, go.
If my arms are long enough, I'll dap you up.
Watch the conversations naturally happen, right? Or get parents together, new drivers, go. And watch what happens. Because the truth is, their parents are out there who are doing research, who are trying to figure out how to help their kids through these different things, who need other people. And if we can give them community.
Absolutely.
Come on now.
Because it can't be this top-down approach to parenting. It can't be like, oh, the pastor can help you be a better
pastor. That's right.
Because there are some pastors who are amazing at pastoring people, but horrible struggling parents.
They need help too. They need to be in the class.
So
community is probably the best way.
So I had a part one and a part two. I'm going to jump in this real quick. I feel like we struggle in community. Within black churches, I feel like we do community well when it comes to fictive kinships, when it comes to brother so-and-so and sister so-and-so, right? But when it comes to, think about like next-gen leaders or like people who are in certain professions across the board, we don't share our resources. We don't share our access. we don't share what we have. Don't start talking about finances. We ain't sharing that. We're withholding that, right? Because we still have that scarcity mentality that somebody's going to take something from me. Mm-hmm. And we have this mentality of that that's been passed down from all the years of oppression and segregation and considered a 3/5 of a person and all of this stuff that, oh, my name is going to be erased from something. If I get, like, I remember somebody asked me to give them a copy of a manuscript of a sermon I preached somewhere, and they were like, oh, I need to get that manuscript. And I was like, the devil is a liar from the pit of hell, and you're going to go back right to where you came. I am not giving you my manuscript, right? But when I think about it like this, like, if someone is asking for, I need a policies and procedures manual. I ain't sharing that with you. I need some job descriptions. I don't know about that. Because, like, we struggle when it comes to intellectual property and sharing. If we can sit down and have a conversation about potty training, new drivers, right? Why can't we sit down and have a conversation about the tools that I'm creating to help my ministry? And if we are really thinking about how we're going to help this generation who don't care about a lot of stuff and who's willing to question everything, we have got to be able to be willing to share resources amongst ourselves. Even, I'm sorry, I'm going to keep on going. Even look at our Boom Facebook group, right? Somebody might post a question or something in there and it might go, nobody responds to it. Where is the community, right? Yeah. And I'm sending texts to people and be like, hey, can you go respond to that so somebody ain't left on red? Like, why are we doing that to each other?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I don't know about y'all, but every time she hit that table, I feel the Holy Ghost.
It's the three fingers.
It did get a little cool in my office. I said, ooh.
I got this microphone here, Brandon, so I couldn't do this.
It's
so real, and it's so close to my heart, because everything you said, I think that when the church begins to care more about parents, I think the church innately begins to care more about kids.
And it's
when you talk about potty training and you talk about parents who drive, it's the recent graduates, and it's those who are in college, and it's and we're seeing a shift now. You have young grandparents who are having to parent again because now you have, if grandma is now 45, 46, and she has a 21, 22-year-old, or they have a 21, 20-year-old kid who now has a baby.
Yes, we need to be discipling parents on how to disciple their kids, but also how we talk about discipleship has got to change.
Mm-hmm. Come on, that kind of, come on.
How we talk about discipleship has got to change. How we talk about what it means to follow Jesus. Going back to Candace's first point, what does that mean? Because the days of listing sins about what it means to follow and not follow Jesus, those days are long gone. Mm-hmm. We miss too much. And one of the reasons why we have so many millennials who are not engaged communities of faith is we spent their generation listing sins that made some feel self-righteous and some feel condemned, and neither one of those edges are good. Neither one of those edges are healthy spiritually.
Yeah.
Now we have a generation that thinks of following Jesus as following a list and don't understand that sin is anything that gets in the way of their purpose. And so some of us want to go back to robots instead of bringing purposeful Jesus followers. So this idea of discipling the next generation, we need to be talking about purpose with parents, kids, and parents. Why are you parenting that child that way?
Yeah,
because that's really what train up a child in the way they should go really mean. Why are you making that boy play football? He don't want to play football.
Yeah.
Like, what is the purpose of God? He's like, why do you feel the need to in that child, your grandchild that you're raising, the same way you disciplined your 30-year-old? Because if it really worked, maybe you wouldn't be raising your grandchild. I'm just talking about what I'm talking about.
Hey, every time y'all say something good, this is it.
The way that we talk about discipleship and spiritual formation, which is a term I think we need to take in, spiritual formation, the way we talk about that with parents, with kids, with teens, it's time, and I believe in the can. So please, y'all, don't put off the recording on Boone saying Pastor Paul don't believe. I do believe in Santa. I believe our definition of it is too narrow, and it has crippled the generation that is now leading our churches.
Because if you think about it, if you say, hey, what are sins? People will start saying sex.
Sex, drinking,
alcohol.
Yeah. It stopped right there. Them the three.
Sin. They're not talking about sin is when God told you that you were supposed to stop somebody from bullying somebody else, and you decided that you didn't want your other friends to make fun of you. We're not talking about that as so sin. Good. And that is sin too.
Yeah, Paula, listen, what you are saying just has me going, because I just started a weekly Zoom Bible study with some of our student leaders. It's called the Home Team. And this is exactly what we are talking about. Like, what does it really mean to follow Jesus? And we were reading Luke chapter 9 that said, where Jesus tells them, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, follow me. So it's not just a denial. It's a two-part to really be following Jesus, because even in their minds, when I talked about what does it mean to follow Jesus, it means I need to stop doing this. I need to stop doing that. I need to stop. But what do you need to start?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And when do you start?
Come on now.
Because here's the thing. I told them, I said, you need to deny yourself. But the scripture says, take up your cross.
That's
when?
Right.
Daily.
That's it.
So how do I do this daily? Because the cross was Jesus' assignment. The cross was his purpose for coming to the earth. So like, how do I daily take up the cross? How do I daily take up my purpose, my assignment? How am I aware daily of what God is asking of me to follow him? What are the things that I need to start just as much as it is? What are the things that I need to stop? And it's until we get conviction about the things we need to start.
Come on.
Yes.
That we will see some of the transformation to see in our schools. I mean, because listen, I went to a school this week, and not even 5 minutes after I got there, I get the word that 30 miles away, there's a school shooting. Mm. And I'm thinking to myself, every week I'm unleashing.
Yeah.
We have at our church, we are blessed to have over 400 middle school and high school students that show up to some of our programming. How am I sending them out to be the type of light in this school that could prevent a shooting like that on their campus? Mm-hmm. Just because they're aware and they're following Christ daily. They're praying for people. They're encouraging people. They're telling people, they're embracing the outcast. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So these are the things that I'm super passionate about. So I'm glad you brought that up, Paula, because we do need to change how we talk about discipleship in our church.
But I think you said something key in there. You were in the school.
Yeah. Because you have, in order to really do discipleship, you have to be willing to go.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Because I think you can't just have someone come every so often on Sunday morning when they decide to come to church and think that you're discipling them.
Yeah.
Like, no.
See, there's a report that came out, or research that came out, and they asked, I think Pew Research did it. Pew Research surveyed over 70,000 students and asked, who did they trust the most?
Mm.
They didn't trust government.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't trust their community leaders. Yep. They didn't even trust their parents.
Yep.
60% said they trusted their teachers and coaches.
Yep.
Wow.
You know, Springtide had a report that revealed the same thing.
60%.
Yep.
And teachers and coaches.
That leads to something else that we need to change in the church. Like, we need to stop increasing our square footage if we're not going to increase our footprint. Like, we would rather build big buildings then increase our footprint in our community.
Whoa. Say that. Run that back.
Something that we were more focused on. And that's why we have a lot of these older churches have these humongous buildings that are not filled yet, because we were more interested in increasing our square footage than we were our footprint. Wow. And people, you got this huge building there, but nobody in your community knows it's there.
I'm done.
And the doors of the church are now open. Thank you for tuning in to this month's episode of the Boom Podcast, because we can drop the mic right there, Chris Cox.
Thank you, Paula. Thank you, Brandon. Thank you so
we
much.
Done.
Thank you, Chris.
What is great?
And listen, I'm passionate about it, my brother. I'm passionate about it, Candace, because listen, I am seeing some amazing stuff happen in these schools. Like, I had a young lady come up to our table. We just set up a table with Young Life, and all we're doing is giving out candy and just having an opportunity for them to come and say, hey, what do you need prayer for? Mm. And a young girl comes up to me and she says, what do I need prayer for? Ooh, I need this because I'm trying to come to Jesus.
Ooh.
Not I'm kind of trying to come to your church. I'm trying to come to Jesus. No, so I'm like, let me bring Jesus to your school so you can, you don't have to travel far to get to him. You know what I'm saying? And if I talk about that, honestly, and I'm just being honest, I'm not just talking about my church, right? But if we talk about that in some of our meetings with some of our leadership, they don't care about that.
No, they want to see them. They want to see them in the building.
Yeah,
they want to see them in the building. If it's not translated into the building, then you're not doing your job.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've seen it so much. But when it
so
comes,
can
to,
I challenge yeah, go ahead. The senior leaders? Let me challenge the senior leaders. Are we more concerned again with growing our name, or are we concerned with making disciples and understanding and being okay with the ramifications for that?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are, let's not pretend that there aren't ramifications for that, because there are. Senior pastor, and we want people to come to the church because they're more likely to give when they're there, and we have expenses to pay. I get it, okay? We got electricity, mortgage, building, man, all of that, and they're more likely to give when they come. But my question is, do we trust God to meet the bill that is God? Question number one. Question number two, if we create bills that were never God's in the first place, and so now we're putting it on the people to meet a bill we created, and so we're not worried about them meeting Jesus, we're worried about them meeting our budget, is what it comes down to. And so we want them in the church on Sunday. So if there are any senior pastors, senior leaders listening to this, we have some work to do as well. For your next generation ministry, for your kids and students to grow, we're going to have to decide where is our priority. And if our priority is only on that Sunday morning platform and them musicians that get paid too much money, yes, I said it, then the next generation will continue to suffer.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sorry, not sorry. Because you know what? It's so real, because you think about it, like, I mean, hey, it is what it is. What burns my grits is when I see.
I don't like no burnt grits.
Just start all over. Where
are you from?
I've been in the South too long. Brandon.
She from She from the DMV, and she been down here too long.
I've been down here too long, and I fell in love.
I fell in love
with a local when I was in grad school, and I've been in Atlanta. I've been in the South. South got something to say, but no, seriously, when you drive by and you see all of these like billboards with the pastor's face on it, right? What does that say that your church is about? Where are you directing people to? Like, it's more of like, hey, come and see me. Think about the way that a lot of churches have become production oriented. It looked like concerts. You don't go to a concert to necessarily meet Jesus. You go to a concert to see a performer.
Yeah, that's
but when
right.
your church is production that's oriented right. and it looks like a concert, and then your that's pastor right. comes out and you're just like, come and see me. It's kind of like, okay. And then if you're saying that the sermon is more kind of shifting a little bit, we got to wrap, y'all. And then we say the sermon is the most important part of the conversation. Like, is the sermon the most important part of the conversation, or is the sermon the most important part of the worship service, because the person who's saying it is the senior pastor, and that's my job, that's my part. Mm-hmm. And my part is the most important part.
Right.
But you never know how a pastor might be able to, or how God might be able to use a word that is said by a worship leader, or a word that is read within the scripture, even the call to worship, right? A doxology to meet the needs of somebody that might be in the pews that day. But when we prioritize the preacher in this in this moment, and we're not necessarily holding reverence and holding up the entire service, then you know, like, what are we really doing, and what are we showing that our focus is on within these churches? So like, it's not about you. Yeah. It has never been about us. It is not about us. It's about how are we, everything that we're doing, how are we pointing them back to Christ? How are we helping people to edify their lives? A lot of parents nowadays, and what parents need, a lot of parents are talking about, how can we break generational curses? How can I not have my kids live through the same debt as me, the same struggles as me, you know, the same situations as me? Like, what are we really doing within our churches to help parents to be able to alleviate some of those pressures in not necessarily making it about you and your ministry?
And I think we have to be willing to be uncomfortable enough to take risk. because a lot of what we're talking about, it's so far from church as usual and so far from the norm. And as church leaders, and I'm even saying this in some ways for myself, you have to be willing to get uncomfortable, to take risk, to take hits, to take criticism, to, you know, risk certain people not supporting, to and a slew of other things. But when you are serious about, at the risk of sounding like some type of motivational speaker, when you are serious about your why, and what the mission of all of this is and what the goal of all of this really is, or at least what it's supposed to be, you know, I really just said the other weekend to my church, there is no real discipleship without real discomfort. You can't have both. They come together. You can't have one without the other. And you got to be willing to be uncomfortable. And a lot of people just aren't, at least about certain things, they just aren't.
We have got to wrap, y'all. Seriously, this is such a good conversation. We're gonna have to do a part two at some point. I ain't lying.
That's one part two.
It's been so good.
This has been great, y'all. Any last thoughts before we wrap?
I think everything we all said goes back to it. And listeners, if you're listening and you're leading in next gen spaces in Black churches, hear the conversation and realize this: you are necessary. You do matter, and keep doing what you're doing, even if it feels like nobody's listening.
Come on now.
Even if it feels like your own senior pastor's not listening, keep doing what you're doing, because some kid, some teen, some parent is really loving Jesus more because of what you're doing.
I would just leave you with, like, listen, the church is alive, it's growing, and it's necessary that we unlearn just as much as we learn. And so we have to be open and willing to do that and stay submitted to God, who is not just this frozen in time being, but he is still alive, and he is still teaching us new things. He's still revealing things about himself. You know, they say God never changed, and I don't believe that he's changed, but he does reveal certain aspects about himself in further, like in future seasons, that he doesn't right now. And we'll think that we've learned enough about him to where we can just stay in one space. But God is like, I'm ready to show you something new about me. That it doesn't mean I've changed, but it's just like, I'm ready to show you another part of me that you haven't explored yet. And we have to be willing to go on that journey with him.
Paula, Brandon, y'all got anything?
Remember that of what you produce, one, it's for you. It's for somebody else. And you never know where that fruit will show up. You may not get the benefit of seeing it. Believe by faith that the seeds you are depositing will grow and bring fruit, even if you're not around to see the results. Keep doing what you're doing.
And I would say to, like, a senior pastor, the same God that you trust to give you power to preach your sermons is the same God that is powerful enough to change the hearts of the people that you're intimidated by. You know, when it comes to the pushback you're scared of, when it comes to the risk that you're scared to take, the same God that gives you all that anointing to preach your great sermons, he can change hearts. And he knows how to use Pharaoh to still accomplish his purpose.
Yes. Mission accomplished. This has been a great episode. I'm so grateful for all of y'all being a part of this. I think this is some essential conversation that is needed to be had. And if you are still wrestling with it, with this conversation, I encourage you, head over to the Boone Community Facebook group and drop some thoughts there. Or, you know, I mean, we have Zoom conversations twice a month that we have conversations like this. Jump on one of our Zoom conversations and wrestle with some of this with us. Because I think that, like I said, the best thing that churches can give a parent is another parent who's parenting at that phase. I think that the best thing that we can give each other who are in this journey of next gen ministry is another person who's doing the work that you're doing. So find some community if you don't have it. Within Boone, we are working to establish and build that community for you. So I encourage you to tap in as you are able. But until next time, peace.